Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Wednesday night Under the Radar podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org.
And a phone.
And a phone.
It's just a freaking phone.
A phone named Zach. Hello, phone.
Oh, I've seen what the inside of this iPhone looks like. I can categorically state it's smarter than I am. Hello,
it's
gentlemen.
A green phone. That's what it is. It's just a green...
It's blue, first of all.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is a show where we talk about all the 22 under the radar. That's the non-major conferences. And I guess, why don't we just get right on into it? Because Zach is coming with a special report about our feature conference in the America East, and you're coming straight from a game, correct?
I am, and I'll tell you what, the radar will rarely have a tougher test than trying to locate some of these games in the America East. But yeah, no, I went to tonight. I would not say I circled on my calendar this game, but it was a game that had piqued my interest. I had a random Wednesday night off, and I may or may not have first looked at a Division III team schedule, and when they weren't home, decided I guess this will do. But yeah, I was at UMBC at Hartford tonight, and Hartford got a win in overtime. It was actually a really good game. Between two of the more interesting teams to watch in what is usually not a very interesting conference.
Well, Hartford 1-0 in the conference now, right? On the way to the championship?
Yeah, possibly. It's John Gallagher's ninth year, and I think it's rare, especially nowadays, to see even a low major school that has one CIT appearance in the eight previous years of a head coach's tenure. And stick with the guy. And they have stuck with John Gallagher. And this year, there are actual expectations around Hartford. They were, I don't remember the, stunningly enough, I can't remember the entire American East preseason poll, but they were one of the teams that people were looking at to, you know, make a run in the league. And right out of the gate, they got a home game against the defending league champs in UMBC, a team that they beat last year, unlike Virginia. Yeah, it was a big test for them. Unfortunately for Hartford, it was during break. So I may or may not have texted a member of this esteemed podcast crew that 5 minutes before the game, I counted how many fans were in the stands, and the number was two numbers.
So 97.
It was 97. It filled up to maybe 120. So in the great crowd, the band was there, but the students are away on break. It's a small private school. So it wasn't the crowd wasn't going to be great, but Hartford, they had a lot of intensity. They jumped out early to a 10-0 lead. And after that, though, UMBC's offense finally started to wake up. Hartford, a very methodical offense. It's not an easy watch. But late in the second, middle of the second half, UMBC put a run on them to get back in the game and actually take the lead. And the last 8 minutes or so of the game of regulation were very, very intensely played. UMBC had a 4-point lead, actually, with about a minute and a half to go. But Hartford hit two free throws inside of 5 seconds to go in regulation to force OT and ended up squeaking out a 2-point win in OT. And it's a big win for them to start off the season, especially because the front end of Hartford's conference slate is very difficult. They have UMBC at home, and next they go on the road Saturday to Vermont, who tonight beat the pants off of a very – bad Maine Black Bears team.
Maine beat Fordham. Come on.
Yeah. Chad, will be in favor of this. He took some wonderful photographs and sent them to me. I would like to borrow the screen share here and show you these are just fat. And Zach, I don't think you can see this, but
I can't see it, but I can feel it emotionally.
Okay. Here, we're starting off with the sign on the door. With the hawk about the door must be closed at all times. That is what we're looking at now. Just the most
ridiculous. Howie the hawk is a cop.
Yeah. Like then we've got the coach's shoes. Now you didn't really get it. I don't think the picture does the shoes justice. But explain what we're looking at here. Well, what we're looking at and what you're hearing. These shoes.
What you're looking at is John Gallagher in a very nice. Totally off the rack, all gray suit. He's a very emotional coach. I'm very into it, marches up the sidelines, not angry, like positive energy, very emotional. And what he's wearing on his feet are basketball shoes, but he has them designed in such a way that they look like dress shoes. They have their white foam soles, which are a dead giveaway, that do nothing to placate the fact that the top half of them are black patent leather, which is a combination I have not seen before, but am very interested in, personally.
Yeah, yeah, I would wear those if I had any feet. Here's just another picture of just what a jam-packed house it was.
Wow, packed.
Another one. And then this picture of the mascot here, Zach, were you outside when you took that?
No, that surprisingly, it was that lovely spring day. That was just, I Googled Howie the Hawk. Howie the Hawk, the Hartford mascot is, if you were working on a C-list Netflix, direct-to-Netflix movie, and you needed just a generic bird mascot, this is exactly what it would look like. This is very smiley, very kid-friendly, almost terrifyingly happy to be at an American Heat basketball contest, some would say. Howie the Hawk, who was not present tonight. They didn't even have enough staff to put somebody in the mascot suit. And I feel personally offended that I wasn't asked, if I'm honest.
Oh, God, that would have been awesome. Okay.
Well, Zach, the only question I have for you about the game is, when the game was over, did you storm the court like you and I almost did at a LaSalle game a couple of years ago?
No. No, the only reason I didn't is there would have been literally nobody else available, and it wouldn't have really had the effect. I bet the last time I was at a University of Hartford game that went to overtime was they played Maine back when America East had that awful, like, tiered tournament where everything but the title game was played at one site. So they were trying to split the baby. The higher seed would host the title game at 11 a.m. on ESPN2 a week later. But they would play the whole rest of the tournament.
Horrible format, yeah.
I mean, it was great for me because it was at Hartford, which was nearby. And Ben and Jerry's was a huge sponsor. So I got a ton of really phenomenal ice cream while watching really terrible basketball. the last time I saw an overtime game was when Hartford was hosting. And it was the year they were like the sixth seed. And it was probably their best seed in 10 years. And they beat Maine in overtime, and the students stormed the court for a quarterfinal, like, 6-3 upset. One of the funniest things I've ever seen. There were no court storming sites because, I have to be honest with you, gentlemen, expectations have changed at the University of Hartford. They expect to be competing in the semifinals. I think this year they have to be at least a semifinal team. There's really no reason this team shouldn't be competitive at the top of the league. UMBC lost arguably their two best players from last year. Vermont's not really it's not really one of the superpower Vermont teams. So I expect Hartford to be in the pick there.
This is a good segue into the rest of the league. There's two teams in this league I really like, and one is Vermont. Surprisingly so, even though they lost so much, they've still had a really good run this year. And Stony Brook, 8 wins away from home, more than any other D1 team.
And that's why, Rocco, I want to bring you in on that. Let's talk about the two top teams in this conference. Just how good are these teams?
Well, Stony Brook, you know, they've come out and impressed pretty well in the early going. They went down and got a big win against Angry Frank in the second night of the year. They beat George Washington the first game on the road as well. And then they've got a road win at Rhode Island. So they've got 3, you know, big name road wins is pretty big deal for a team in this league. Their only losses are Brown, Hofstra, Holy Cross. So Brown, Holy Cross, not great losses, but they look like a top 150 team at least. And then Vermont, you can put an argument up for as like a top 100 type team. KenPom's got them 85th today. They've got, you know, wins over Northeastern, George Mason, St. Bonaventure, Yale. So, you know, they look – Anthony Lamb's still there, who's probably going to be player of the year in the league. So, Hartford probably comes in right at third, and I can't really see anybody out of those three winning it.
Yeah, and the upcoming schedule I just threw up here, and Zach mentioned it, though, Hartford at Vermont, probably the game of the week this week in this conference.
Oh, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
And Hartford did beat win at Boston College a couple weeks ago, which is mostly just funny to me more than anything else. I just wanted to mention that.
I think while on this conference, I do got to have to give a shout out also to New Hampshire, who picked up a win over Lowell tonight, their first D1 win of the season. So they're off of that very short list and possibly out of centenary bid contention now with that win.
Former team of the people, New Hampshire.
Former team of the people, 350 in the net heading into today. So not a very good season for New Hampshire.
It's just, can I quick rant? What is Maine doing? Maine basketball's got everything against it. Literally nobody knows this. Maine plays off campus, miles from campus. And
I didn't know that.
You know, it's one thing when UConn, who's not very good, does that. Maine doing it. Well, I've been there. It's there. They used to play some games in the hockey arena, and it's capable. But I really think this comes down to the athletic department is just lazy and doesn't want to change it over. And also, they want to make the ice as good as possible for the hockey team, which is their big draw. Except the hockey team now plays some games off campus, and I have personally terribly hooped it up. In Maine, they have their old gym from like the 1930s on campus or whatever. And there was talk about putting money into renovating that to bring some games back to campus. And I haven't delved into this. Either they haven't gotten the money or they've chosen not to. And Maine for several years now, they play in downtown Bangor, as the locals would pronounce it, at the Bangor Civic Center. And it's just, Maine's got enough things going against it as a program. They have no student involvement at all. And it's just, I wish America East would put, you know, kind of prod them a little bit about it. And by the way, UNH has started to creep into thinking about doing this too with their situation in Durham. So those are a couple of state schools that are doing it one way. Meanwhile, Vermont announced just a couple of weeks ago the naming rights have been sold. So they're doing a huge renovation for their field house. So they're going to have a very nice facility. They're going to redo the gym and everything. They're going to put glass on the end. Everything's going to be very nice. And so they're going to get richer at the top end of the conference with facilities. On the other hand, you've got the states right around them who have the exact same recruiting struggles, you would think. Same desolation, same long trips, same amount of snow. There's so much snow. It's a lot of snow. And anything into it. It's just interesting for me personally as a sports business nerd to see how three different schools that are basically the same thing doing one sport in completely different ways. And I just don't get it. And it's, you mentioned Maine and New Hampshire, we know they stink. It really comes down to, it's one thing to be bad, but there's just no institutional support. And I just, my heart goes out to the players and the coaching staff there who are doing this with absolutely nothing. And Maine is a school that just had a run from nowhere to the semifinals of the FCS playoff. So and they don't invest anything in football either. So it almost hurts basketball because the basketball coach says you got to help us out. They go, well, football gets no help, and look what they did. So, I mean, Maine shouldn't be 350. I mean, Maine's bad, but Maine should not be that bad. I mean, Dartmouth figures it out. Dartmouth's top 270.
Yeah, we got three teams. Binghamton also in the 300s here in the Nets. Yeah. Not a good
– well, not good the Nets have – they have a different institutional – problems in the past.
Yeah, but
mistakes were made. We'll leave it at that.
All right, let's roll on to some other conferences, though.
We got 21 more to go.
We got 21 more to go. If we go at this rate, we've got 7 hours.
I'm talking about the NEC. NEC basketball.
We'll get to NEC. How about a little bit of A-Sun first, where we talk about actually a real good team. Several good teams. We talk about 300-plus teams. We got two top 50 net teams still here in the A-Sun, in Liberty and Lipscomb. Although the Rocco, I still can't quite figure out why Liberty is that high in the net, because their profile doesn't seem to equate to that, does it?
Hard to say. I think, you know, the big win was at UCLA, and they crushed them. And right. I think that scoring margin benefit might be helping a little bit with half a season of data in there so far. We'll see how much weight that carries as two more months go by. But they do look like a good team. When you watch them live. They've got some real nice pieces. They're getting a really big season out of Scotty James. He's a junior. He's been really consistent throughout the year. I think tonight he put up another 15 and got a really high. I don't know if you guys look at the offensive rating numbers on KenPom's site. But typically anything above 150 in a game is good, and he's done that several times. He had a 160 today. So anyway, Liberty, good team. Lipscomb, of course, proved themselves with a couple big wins during the non-league. But what about NJIT? Wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that, on them.
Yeah, NJIT, let me pull them up real quickly, and then I'm going to go back to this Liberty Lipscomb thing also. But NJIT, I'll put them up here on the right side of the screen. David, a lot of wins, a couple bad losses, though, including a home loss to Cornell. But
yeah, all in all, NJIT, and it's we're hugely supportive of this program and as far as they've come from what was one of the roughest transitions ever. But, you know, the win at Duquesne was pretty good. A lot of Tier 3 and Tier 4 wins, but nothing really jumping out. I think that they're having an incredible year by their standards and that they're better than most of the rest of the league. This is a three-horse race. They're one of the three horses, but really I just don't think they're quite as good as Lipscomb I don't think they're quite as good as Liberty, who isn't quite as good as Lipscomb. I still like Lipscomb a lot more than the other two.
Well, let me bring up the Lipscomb profile again. And, Zach, I know you can't see this, but I've got both Liberty and Lipscomb on the screen. But if you look at both teams have four losses. Three of them are Tier 1 and Tier 2. They both have a one Tier 3 loss. On the good side, though, Lipscomb has a Tier 1 win on the road at TCU, a Tier 2 win at SMU, and a Tier 3 win home win against Vermont. While Liberty has nothing in Tier 1, the win at UCLA, then wins at Kent State and Florida Gulf Coast and a home win over Georgia State. Those are their Tier 3. I just see that Lipscomb profile is so much better. The predictive metrics are almost equivalent. The resume metrics, though, are a lot better on Lipscomb. And yet in the net, Liberty is 3 points higher. And that's where I kind of scratch my head at the net, that it looks more like a predictive metric to me than anything results-based. And we're learning about the net, and this is just one of the ones that's a head scratcher for me, I guess. Rocco, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that. I think the net's design, and you know, I'm sure you guys are reading a lot of the same articles I am, to really account for a full season's worth of data after we get into March. But I want to see how much that pendulum swings as we get into late February, early March.
I mean, the other big number here is 222 strength of schedule for Liberty, 82 for Lipscomb. So, I mean, it's almost like strength of schedule doesn't count in the net.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think the thing is when it comes down to a team sheet, you're going to use this data to sort the results and sort the teams. But once you look at two resumes side by side like this, I think it's very obvious and clear to anybody that's been through the exercise that this would favor Lipscomb by a pretty –
especially if Lipscomb gets out there and beats them twice, which
which we'll know by March, right?
And yeah, these things may normalize by then. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, a thing on NJIT. I pulled over so I can be more of an active participant. NJIT is one of the shortest teams in the country, so that they're not going to get a lot of offensive rebounds. And from what I remember watching of Liberty, I mean, Liberty's not much taller, but they're also a team that I think has played a tougher schedule too. In terms of, I mean, Liberty went and we talked about the UCLA game, but they also played Georgetown and played okay, and played Alabama. I think in retrospect, Georgetown wishes they hadn't scheduled Liberty because that's far too competitive for their liking in the non-conference.
No. Lipscomb played at Louisville. They played at Clemson. They played Belmont twice. I don't think that they're a harder schedule than Lipscomb at all. I think Lipscomb is the better schedule.
Yeah, I would agree.
Fair. Yeah. See, this is when you don't know what you're talking about.
I'm glad you pulled over, Zach. It would have been funny had you not been hurt, but had you wrecked the car.
Yeah, I did not suffer brain damage. My brain was always like this.
Sorry, go ahead, Bracco.
Yeah, plus, I don't think we've mentioned Liberty's neutral court loss to Austin Peay really doesn't do them any favors either.
Oh, no. Oh, one more item. The first ever win for North Alabama last night as a Div 1 program. So
yes, congratulations. The first ever win against a D1 team.
As a D1 team, yeah.
Well, they never beat a D1 team as a non-D1 team either.
Oh, okay.
So, upcoming schedule, the big game next Wednesday night, Lipscomb at NJIT. That's when I think we're certainly in this league. But let's try to keep rolling here so we can get done in within about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
Big Sky Conference. Northern Colorado is still undefeated.
Yeah, still not as good as Montana, but they are still undefeated.
Right. Montana suffered the home loss to Portland State. That's a real head scratcher, though, Rocky.
So I don't know if you guys saw the clip on that, but Montana had an 8-point lead with under a minute left, and Portland State got it into overtime with a crazy press.
I was watching the game and thought it was over, and I missed it.
I got the cliff notes at the end of the night. It was pretty crazy. So maybe a lesson learned from Montana. They should have the most talent, but they've had some head scratchers this year. I didn't expect them to be already at the 5-loss mark. And then Northern Colorado, I mean, they had to go OT just to beat Idaho, who's a bottom
lousy Idaho team.
Lousy Idaho team. That game was in Greeley, Colorado. So, you know, I think this is kind of almost a roll of the dice type of league. Montana, a little bit of edge talent-wise, but they're having some issues trying to get the right rotation in place because there's some lineup combinations that have really struggled.
And that Weber State, who might be the other team that competes in this league, seems to always be – they lose at home to Southern Utah over the weekend on top of that. So it's just
– yeah, just kind of an upside – things kind of upside down right now.
Well Tech State's at the bottom of the
league, so that is as it should be. But
well, I mean, to be fair, it's really more they may have ruined BYU's resume forever because BYU is the only team that Weber State has beaten who is ranked above in KenPom inside of the top 149. So that really more ruined BYU than helped Weber State. They're just going to try it. Weber State's going to push tempo, but I don't think they're as good as the other two teams you mentioned.
Big game this weekend, actually. Montana's at Northern Colorado. Circle that one. That may be one of the top games of the season in the Big Sky, believe it or not. Big South Conference, let's keep things rolling here, where every team has one game other than Hampton who hasn't even played yet, so not much we can tell at this point, I guess, other than the fact that UNC Asheville really, really, really sucks.
Right, and, well, Asheville does suck. If history repeats itself, you'll see that 1-11 are separated by just one game right now. Now, they've only played one game, but generally after they've played 10 games, there's only one or two games that separates the top 9 or 10 teams in this league. So lots of parity, but I still like Radford. I mean, I really, really like them. I know that they had that losing streak of 4 or 5 or whatever it was, but they were all road bye games. And I mean, who else in this league has even looked – no one's looked as good as they have.
Well, Gardner-Webb has been Georgia Tech and Wake Forest, but then they also lost to Campbell, who has Chris Clemens.
Like I say, should they feel good about beating Georgia Tech and Wake Forest? Is that particularly hard to do these days?
Well, Virginia Tech struggled with Georgia Tech tonight, so.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I just want to call out a couple quick shout-outs, Chad. Presbyterian, they were a team we thought was going to be one of the worst in D1. They've actually won 3 in a row, and they've won multiple road games. Pretty cool story going on there. They're up in the top 230 now, which for them we would have never expected. And then shout-out to Tubby Smith for first Big South game. He gets the win on the road at Charleston Southern in the last minute.
Yes, good.
And shout-out to new Big South member Hampton, which – if you want to put on the screen their KenPom schedule, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Hampton in their first,
go ahead.
Well, in general, I mean, Hampton has 5 wins. 3 of them are non D1. One of them is Howard, and they also beat Richmond by 20.
So, the fact that you're doing this from memory is amazing.
Let's see if he's actually right. I'll pull that up right now.
Zach is pulled over on the side of the road.
Yes,
right.
He did. It was a 20-point win at Richmond, a win at Howard, and 3 non-D1 wins. You are correct.
I pulled over. I'm on my phone. Don't give me that much credit. I'm in a parking lot. It's roughly safe. Okay. But, yeah, it's their first year in the Big South. It's going to be a little weird for me seeing Hampton in the Big South, but it'll be interesting to see how – I don't think they're very good, but it'll be their first time for a lot of these schools seeing them regularly this late in the year. So it'll be interesting to see how a lot of them handle it, especially in a league where, as you guys said, every year it's always just so close from the top to the bottom.
Well, their first Big South game of the season is tomorrow night hosting Charleston Southern. I guess in terms of the other games this week, I'm not that certain if there's any that we're really circling here. Radford is hosting Presbyterian on Saturday. Maybe that's the game.
Yeah, that would be the one I would look to.
Ask for that Longwood right chance for a win there.
Time they didn't. The first place team hosts the tournament, so yeah. Lots of this. It should be fun.
Big West Conference, Rocco. Let me bring you in here on this conference that is starting conference play tonight. Actually, I think the first games are going on right now as we record this, I believe.
Yeah, a lot of excitement. I think you said earlier they're the last conference to get started, so we're going to have everybody underway after today. Irvine's had a tremendous non-conference schedule, and UC Santa Barbara is coming in with some swag after beating San Francisco, who's a really good team, over the holiday break. So I think those are the established favorites coming in, but Cal State Fullerton's got Kyle Allman, who's a tremendous player. I think he's reigning conference player of the year. They're capable of beating anybody on any night. And then you look to a team like Hawaii, who you know you're going to have a real hard time ever beating them on the islands, at least. It's going to be a pretty good year, I think, across the league. I think Northridge is much improved under Gottfried as well. And then, you know, Cal Poly probably being the bottom of the barrel type team for the league to beat up on.
Right. I don't know if there's any really huge games coming up this week because Irvine and Santa Barbara, Hawaii, none of those three are playing each other. But
right,
well, we've got Hawaii Fullerton tonight. Like you said, last conference to start, and they're of course waiting till midnight to get the final first conference game of the year in for those two. But shout out to Jedrick Taylor, by the way, at Cal State Fullerton. Their non-conference schedule is absolutely preposterous. They fit toughest in the country according to KenPom. I mean, this is a team right now that's sitting at 4-10, but is still expected to be near the top of this conference. So, we're used to seeing that sort of thing with Long Beach State with Dan Monson. This time, it's really going to be Fullerton. This team that got beat up on for 3 months, are they going to take their aggression out on much easier opponents? That'll be interesting to watch.
Colonial is a conference we've discussed about how disappointed we have been. And then Charleston, who is the one team we were praising, starts the season with a conference season loss to James Madison.
I'd forgotten about that during the voting, so yeah. We might need to adjust that if you have.
But now Hofstra, though, 3-0. Zach, I got to ask you about them. You're a big Hofstra fan, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Joe Mihalich and the Pride. Who got, once again, it seems like they get a buzzer beater against Northeastern every, 3 years at home. It's this bizarre thing. But they're red hot. They have won 10 in a row, including their first three in league play. And let's see, tomorrow night they're at William & Mary and then at Elon Saturday. So they have played 4 in a row at home, so we'll see if they can translate this on the road. They had a pretty soft non-conference, which made it even worse when they struggled in it, which largely contributed, I think, to why the Colonial was so down. But it seems like, you know, at the right time of year, maybe Hofstra's starting to get hot. And they're a team that probably should be the best team in the league, and they're finally starting to look like it.
Well, Rocco, you agree with that, or do you think Charleston still ends up being the best team in the league? And I think we always have to throw in there the fact that Charleston will host the conference tournament. So.
Yeah, I mean, that does give Charleston the edge just because they're in their backyard and arguably the most talent in the league with Jarrell Brantley back and Grant Riller still on the team. They really just lost Shaley last year, which is a big loss. I think he's playing on the Hornets now. But, I think Hofstra's been super impressive, as Zach mentioned. I think they're finding ways to win. And that can just – when you win this many games in a row, that can give new levels of confidence to – otherwise just barely above average type talent and you know that's going to be real important in March. So really interesting story brewing. I also think Northeastern still has a lot of talent that they're waiting for some guys to come back. I think if they get fully healthy, they'll be a serious contender as well.
Northeastern had their game with Delaware last week that went to two OTs. I don't know if you guys saw it. Just it was awesome. It was really entertaining. It was up and down. And Northeastern basically snatched Jaws from the
victory from the or Jaws of
victory. They snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. I finally figured it out. I mean, they were up. I mean, Northeastern was up 12 late in the first half and just couldn't put away Delaware, and Delaware hung around and kept in it. And credit. you know, really to Mark Inglesby and the Blue Hens for getting that win. You mentioned Charleston. They're a good team, but they did also just lose to James Madison. And that loss ruins a fascinating subplot every year, which is Charleston was right there as the team I was going to try and make an at-large case for that is not remotely defensible, just because I don't think it's fair what these teams have to go through. Right. It would have been my new Stephen F. Austin at-large from a few years ago.
Well, interesting game this weekend. Delaware, who just seems to win games, even though I don't think it's a very good team, they find a way to win this game. They're at Charleston this weekend. That might be the game to circle this week in the Colonial. CUSA,
it's
though.
Not very watchable, though. I mean, they're so slow, Delaware. Sorry, go ahead. CUSA.
CUSA, and I think we got to talk a little North Texas because, David, I'm turning into a believer after their win over Louisiana Tech and they followed it up with although they struggled, they did get by Southern Miss.
Yeah, and Southern Miss, a program that isn't quite there yet, but that is improving under Doc Sadler. But, yeah, let's North Texas here. 12-1 on the year, a relatively weak schedule, so we didn't – 12-1 against D1, I'm sorry. 15-1 overall against the weak schedule. They ran out against a La Tech team that we liked all year and still like. They built up an early 17-point lead. That was just a great game. Louisiana Tech came back, actually tied it, but North Texas holding on the win, one of their more impressive wins per se. But, again, how does the committee handle this? I know that they're high in the net. I know that part of the idea of the net is to help, at least according to what David Warlock said, identify teams from outside the power conferences that are good. But when you look at this resume, at the end of the day, have they shown an ability to do anything other than beat up on teams outside the top 100?
Yeah, no. Rock, a loss at Oklahoma. Other than that, they only have one other game against any team, but anybody in the top two tiers, and was a win at Indiana State.
Right, and the three non-D1 wins. I got good news, though, for Mean Green fans. That win at New Mexico certainly looks a lot better today than it did last week at this time. So maybe that can continue to improve if New Mexico continues to roll with the momentum after the blowout over Nevada. I also want to just give a shout-out to Rice, who also came out of nowhere to sweep Southern Miss and La Tech. That was definitely a surprise, both of those results. As Rice was looked at as a bottom feeder. And then another interesting nugget happened last week with scheduling from the Conference USA. To kick conference playoff, they had both UTSA and UTEP play each other twice in 3 days. The first matchup in San Antonio and the second one in El Paso. And UTSA gets a quick 2-0 start because they got to play UTEP.
Yeah, that UTSA team that lost to non-D1 St. Edward's earlier in the season, now coming back and sweeping UTEP. So congrats to UTEP.
Not ideal, I think it's safe to say. But it'll also be interesting to note to watch with Conference USA, of course. Chad, you know, they've got this dynamic scheduling component coming later in the season. And so it'll be interesting to see where that factors in for a team like North Texas, who – is it the sort of, you know, I don't think, and I'll go to the mat for any low major school, but I can't even defend this schedule. But it's the sort of thing that backfires on them if, congratulations, now you've got North Texas playing more tough games in conference. Is that what you really want here?
Yeah, also got to give a quick shout out here to a couple of other teams. Old Dominion and Western Kentucky, both 1-1. Old Dominion losing at home to Marshall and then followed up with the win over Western Kentucky. So two teams that we're going to watch all season, though.
Yeah, if you look at Old Dominion's resume, there was some stuff on it that would indicate that if they could blow through this league, that maybe they could be inside the bubble. It'll be interesting when they play North Texas to see what happens. I still think Old Dominion's the best team.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right. The upcoming schedule for this week in CUSA, North Texas is at UTEP in a bye game, and then at San Antonio, which might be another bye game.
Yeah.
So they might be 17-1 by next week. At least they should be.
Yeah. And now that
Western Kentucky at Marshall, you may want to circle that one on Saturday, though.
Right. Well, you do have to, like, I mean, let's keep in mind, for the last 4 years, this conference has put a team in the round of 32. And for the last year, they gave us the curtain. So, I mean, they are making basketball history here.
I mean, now the dynamic scheduling, too.
If only anybody could watch it.
Yeah.
Horizon League. Just when we thought Northern Kentucky was the team to watch, they start off conference season by losing to Oakland. And I'm just rock on fed up with this conference.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, it's tough. But hey, you've been on it just like most of us all year, Chad. Antoine Davis, son of Mike Davis. I mean, every time he takes the court, he goes off. Nobody can stop this kid.
The rest of the team sucks, but he's incredible.
He's incredible. So look at the two games last week. He had 48 against Wright State, and they beat like the preseason either favorite or co-favorite because essentially just him. He scores 48 of the 79 Detroit points. And then the game after, he gets Northern Kentucky, the other co-favorite, and puts up 33 in both games. He made 10 threes against Wright State. He made 13 field goals against Northern Kentucky. I mean, he's shooting at an incredible percentage. And everybody in the gym knows he's getting the ball, and they still can't stop him. It's pretty amazing.
Really nice job by Mike Davis pulling in that recruit.
David, you want to address Green Bay briefly? 3-0 now with wins over Youngstown and Cleveland State this week at home?
Yeah, and a smattering of good things out of conference, at least by comparison to the rest of the league. If there is a bright spot, or at least a spot that isn't quite as dark, I think it is Green Bay.
All right, upcoming schedule.
Green Bay actually hit a buzzer beater to beat which game was that? Was that the Cleveland State? Yeah, that was they hit the buzzer to win that.
They're at Detroit and at Oakland this week. Friday night, though, Wright State at Northern Kentucky. That's become a huge rivalry.
I will be there.
Oh, right. David Griggs. Right, yeah. David, they allow you in the building?
Well, no, they don't know that I'm coming.
And also Thursday night, Green Bay will be the next team to try and figure out Antoine Davis. So they get their 3-0 start. Is on the line with him in Detroit coming into the gym. That'll be fun to watch as well. And we mentioned earlier offensive efficiency, the Horizon League, the second most efficient league in the country in offensive efficiency. So it's a fun
one. I
don't want
to know what their defensive efficiency is then. Holy.
The second most offensively efficient.
Ivy League saw play start with us only a single game so far, but it was the Princeton Penn game, which went overtime. Real good game. Penn continuing to slide, though. They go and they do some incredible things, and then I don't know what the hell has happened to this Penn team, Rocco.
Yeah, I don't know either. I still am in shock about the Monmouth loss that I wasn't even prepared for the next game. I'm pretty surprised that I don't know if they have an injury situation. I need to do a little bit deeper dive on the Penn roster situation, but. I got to see Princeton play a few weeks ago, and I was completely not impressed. They were handled at the game I was at against St. Joe's, and they have one good player that I thought was a legitimate good shooter and driver slasher. Devin Kennedy's that guy, but they're getting some good play out of Richmond Aragonizo. I know he's a effective big when he stays out of foul trouble. Looks like he did a good job of that, even though he fouled out at the end of the game for most of the game to put up 20 points against Penn.
Yeah, and Lee, I mean, is this Princeton team the best team now with that and with the win at Arizona State last week?
I'm going with Yale for now until Penn figures out their problems. Okay. They've won six.
Yeah.
I spoke up because I was at the first of that six-game winning streak for Yale when they beat Albany on December 11th. And actually, they came out of the traps. And I had expectations, you know, of the game. And for the first 10 minutes, they basically Yale doesn't play offense. And then they snapped a huge run on Albany, a bad Albany team. But they really showed up. And that was on the backs of having lost at Duke, a game in which they actually played pretty well, and Duke just happened late. But I've been very impressed at watching them in person and what they've done since. Yale to put away Albany the way they did, not a big deal. Monmouth, they struggled with, and you shouldn't. But since then, Iona, a team that's going to try and run you out of the gym, they dumped 99 on them. So this is a team, you know, they beat the horrendous Cal Golden Bears to start the season. They have the neutral win over Miami, which is huge. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, I agree. I think Yale is the team to beat in this league, led by Mie Oni, the 6'6 junior swing man. I think they're the team to beat, and they're also that Yale is hosting the Ivy tournament this year. So.
Yes, that's a good point. And David, not only four games involving Ivy League teams, two are non D1 this weekend, but Princeton Penn round two right off the start at the season here.
That they format it this way now. I don't know how I feel about it, if at all. It used to always be bookend games. They would open and close against each other.
It's because the Ivy League tournament, they bounced the first game up to the start of the season,
Mm-hmm.
We have a weird reality now. Brown might not suck, and it's kind of weird.
Yeah, Brown does not suck.
Like, literally, the last time they were good, Craig Robinson was the coach, which is not a sentence that really works, but is for some reason accurate. So I wanted to just shout out Brown. I mean, sure, their best win is Stony Brook, but, you know, they're sitting at 11-4 going into league play. They're currently, you know, I just had it in front of me.
They're going to be 12-4. They got Johnson and Wales on Monday night.
Well, they are playing two schools at once.
How many teams is Johnson and Wales playing?
Aren't there three Johnson and Wales? There's the Colorado, the Rhode Island, and the North Carolina.
I think there's another somewhere. Yep,
There are. But Brown, 129 in KenPom. They're going to be 12-4. Then they have the home and home with Yale. So that'll be interesting to see if Brown is remotely for real. I may or may not have watched their game against Sacred Heart because I have a problem. Okay, but. The Browns is the team I'm keeping an eye on because it would be really funny to me if they somehow won the league. Oh my God, if Brown made the NCAA.
Zach,
I would be in favor.
I got to stick with you, Zach, for the next league because I know it's one of your favorites. It's the Metro Atlantic. And can you tell us what the hell's wrong with this conference? Because I don't know. I've been able to figure it out.
Boy, is it bad. It's real bad. It's really very bad, in fact. Rider is the best team, probably. They played a pretty good non-conference schedule and won none of it. So that's you know, a problem. I think that my favorite coach, Tim Kluse, and his Iona Gales are probably the favorite just because the league is so bad right now. It's usually a league that's got a lot of offense, a lot of tempo, and it's got the tempo, folks, but the offense is gone, and it's dark, and we might die. The second-best offensive team in the league is Siena, who is factually abhorrent. They're 119th in OE, which is second-best in the league. They're 352 in tempo nationally. So, you know, the Metro Atlantic is taking a gap year. They're trying to figure some stuff out. The league is very, very bad. Monmouth falling apart is not great. It's even worse when Monmouth then starts winning league games.
Yeah, they beat St. Peter's, but they blew out St. Peter's.
They did, which is not good. And again, God, you know, Shaheen Holloway is new in that job, but not a great start for them. It's so weird. They get the home win against Siena, St. Peter's, and you think, oh, well, they get Monmouth next. They can start out 2-0 and maybe make some hay, and then they lose. I can't figure this league out. Marist might be in the mix, and Marist is really, really bad. And I watch them a lot because I have a good friend who's a Marist alum. Marist has some losses this year that are just defy description. I don't even remember which one it is. They had like a 10-point lead with 2 minutes to go and lost. This league is so bad. It makes me sad. I can't talk. I'm very emotionally troubled right now by it.
Well, Rocco, is there any games worth watching here in the upcoming week in the Metro Atlantic? I don't know if there are or not, but
yeah, Ryder Canisius, I'd say, just because they're both 2-0, and you know, I agree, it is sad. It's usually a couple teams that are sleeper stories nationally. We got none of that going on right now, and you know, I love the atmospheres at the games, but it's looking bleak for the league.
And I gotta give shout
out a lot of newer coaches in the league too, which hasn't helped. So it's a lot of guys. They've got a lot of new young guys. So they not a lot of established programs, which is part of why you see so much turnover. This is going to take a couple of years.
Well,
and what it's not going to take
Zach, I think you want to talk about coaches, though. Manhattan, Steve Massiel. This was a guy that was on the verge of a job in the American until he lied on his resume. But
it's such a sliding doors thing. UConn played them this year. And I talked about during the game, I'm like, Steve Mazziello, this has not worked out for you as you intended it. I mean, Manhattan's horrific. This guy is – the only thing that's going to be worse is when – they're definitely going to hire Bobby Gonzalez, aren't they? They're going to. Manhattan, baby, what is you doing? It's just they're Mazziello on the sideline is really difficult to watch. He's yelling at opposing players. It's bad. It's very bad right now. They're in
a guard's
place.
All right. We gotta keep moving here, though. We're really lagging behind in the time here. So let's go quickly into the Mid-American Conference. There are some really good teams here. And we saw it start off with Toledo losing to Ball State, getting crushed by Buffalo. Ball State turns around and loses a game to Eastern Michigan. David.
We talked about how hard it is, as good as some of these teams had looked, Ball State and Toledo being among the two, to run through this league. And with the exception of Buffalo, who isn't technically under the radar, everybody that we kind of had our eyes on, Kent State, Akron a little bit, Toledo certainly, they've all already lost. We are two games into the year.
Rocco, unless Buffalo slips up this conference tournament, that's the only way I think we get a two bids out of this league, whereas I thought we had a shot at it earlier this year.
Yeah, we might have had a shot at it, but I mean, I could have told you, once Toledo started playing against these types of teams, I just think they have a lot of good shooters, but they don't play a very good D at all, and they don't create turnovers. There's a lot of holes on the team from what I saw when I saw them in person.
Yeah.
And so they never in my head personally put them in a realistic at large possibility. I know they had the results to do it, but I knew eventually they would hit a wall here this year.
Yeah, Central Michigan off to a 2-0 start, albeit against weak competition. Their record's bloated way up, but it's against a sub-300 strength of schedule.
Yeah, so they've got Bowling Green in Northern Illinois this week, so I don't know that we're really going to see much from them for a while. Maybe you want to circle.
Bowling Green's a little bit hot right now. They've won six in a row, so it could be a good game.
Okay.
Can the league please get rid of the divisions? Please. They've never both been good at the same time. It's so bad.
Well, the divisions are only for scheduling, though, Zach. They're not for proceeding in the conference.
Then you don't need them.
Yeah, they don't need them. But
I hate change. It's weird to me.
You know what it is it gives a second team a chance to hang a banner as a division champion, and that's
it really does, because you never see it's always one division seems to always be loaded, and I think it's where the scheduling thing hurts them.
Well, in that one division is the East.
Yes, 100% of the time. Hard to believe that Western Michigan and Toledo haven't been able to take advantage of that.
Let's move on.
Toledo's not bad. Sorry.
We're moving on to the MEAC, where the best team, Norfolk State, finished up their non-conference season last week by losing to non-D1 Lincoln. So this is one of our favorite leagues where we talk about bad basketball. But I want to start out the MEAC discussion by giving a shout-out to Maryland Eastern Shore. I've been talking that UNC Asheville was, I thought, the worst team in Division I. Eastern Shore lost at home last night to Howard by 40 points. This is a horribly bad Eastern Shore team this year.
I'm that gif of the standing ovation from the Academy Awards a couple of years ago right now. That's a team effort. You got to bring it for 40 minutes to lose by 42 points.
And in looking at merit rankings or the resume rankings, like them a little more than the predictive rankings.
Yeah.
Do they?
Yes. Predictive rankings, they're 351 or worse in all of them.
There's so much red in this KenPom profile. Oh, my God. You know what? We talk about it every year. It's just for the MEAC and Slack, it's a different sport. They're behind the eight ball in every regard.
Yeah.
So to try to be positive, Norfolk State, they should run through this league, and hopefully they can cause a scare in the tournament again.
Well, what about the team of the people here? They get the big win in overtime, and this followed a game where they lost by just two or three at the buzzer. So just
very,
a game
very
out of
nice win against Morgan at Morgan State on Monday night.
Right.
Upcoming schedule, Rocco, any comments on the upcoming schedule or anything about this league?
Not a lot. I was leaning on you guys because I knew you guys were watching all the MEAC action during the college football national title game, which I give you a lot of credit for.
Yeah, shout out to the MEAC. There were 10 Division I men's games opposite the national championship in football, and three of them were being played in the state of Alabama. That is some commitment. That is freaking commitment. But there was MEAC news today, Chad. I don't know if you are familiar.
No, go ahead.
The MEAC today announced that they have signed a new streaming deal with Flow Sports.
Flow Hoops,
Flow Hoops. Yep.
Flow Hoops. The same folks. Flow Sports is the overreaching thing. It's Flow Hoops. This is the day after the Flow people signed a deal with DC United and MLS, so that's the company they're keeping. But so MEAC will be streamed on a pay platform going forward. So that it's a step for the league. I mean, we're three people who follow this league, or four, rather. And video is not really something that's been prevalent in the MEAC. They've had worse coverage than, like, even the SWAC. So for them, look, the paywall, I don't know if anybody's going to get it, but just to even have something is a step forward.
Well the big question is going to be how many games are actually even on that platform, and that's something we're going to find out over the next couple of weeks as to whether or not I'm going to bother ordering it. So
the answer is yes.
Well, maybe. Missouri Valley Conference, another super disappointing league, Rocco. And just when we thought Drake was the team, they lose a couple games, although they bounced back last night against Southern Illinois. And now, should we talk Valpo now? I mean,
I guess we have to just because they're the lone undefeated team left. I think they've gotten a nice little break to start the year schedule-wise. Illinois State, they hit the half-court shot to win that one. Missouri State's and Bradley are both they're in the dumps trying to figure things out. So nice start to the schedule, but now they got to go to Southern Illinois and Loyola Chicago, which on the road, I still believe both of those are tough places to get W's. But I was very impressed last night with the way that Evansville under first year head coach Walter McCarty
took
the Ramblers to the shed after it looked like the Ramblers were starting to figure things out. And they controlled that from the opening tip. So, I think they gained some confidence when they won that overtime game against Drake, and that was a season-changing game for Drake because Nick Norton was probably the best player in this conference in the non-league portion of the schedule and went down for the season in that game. So Drake's really in trouble now without Norton, and that was hard to see. But Evansville, I think they're going to continue to improve. Valpo, I don't think, has too much staying power. I think Loyola will stay near the top. But yeah, it's a crapshoot. Indiana State at times has shown some life, but yeah, it's unfortunate that we don't have like an at-large type team.
Right. The upcoming schedule, David, for the Missouri Valley, I just fleshed up on the screen there. Valpo is at Southern Illinois at Loyola. We want to circle that one next Tuesday night at Loyola.
Yeah, probably so. And then any game Southern Illinois plays, if you don't watch the game, you just want to make sure you catch the half when they interview Barry Hansen.
You just want to and pick up a bottle of his barbecue sauce while you're at it.
Pick up a bottle of his
Zach, Northeast Conference time.
Oh boy, it's a league that has struggled, and it's struggled, but. This is actually one of the better years in terms of efficiency margins for the league, which, isn't saying much. I think Wagner's probably the best team in the league, but they also stumbled out of the gate with the, a home loss to St. Francis. And as a result, we've got at the top of the pile right now, Sacred Heart and Robert Morris. I would love nothing more than Bobby Valentine's Sacred Heart Pioneers to have some staying power here. But they're quite bad. So their first two wins, they got two home wins out of the way against LIU and Central Connecticut, an improving Central Connecticut team that is still just not good. So I think Wagner's still the team to beat here.
I disagree. I kind of think Robert Morris just seems to do it every year when we get to this time of year, and I just kind of get to have the feel that they may be the team to do it again. I know they.
What about really, St. Francis, Brooklyn. I know they went down, but I mean, I kind of like what they had done all year long.
I'll tell you though, I mean, Rocco, at the end of the day, I think there's been 10 games of this conference so far. I think I've probably watched at least part of at least 7 of them. It's just fun basketball, isn't
it? Oh, it is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we're in agreement. Yeah, we're in agreement on that. That's no doubt. St. Francis, New York, actually, you know, Wagner's the highest rated team in the metrics, but St. Francis, New York bounced back with a big win at Wagner over the weekend, I believe. So I think those two are probably the highest rated, but I don't think that matters in the NEC like it does in other leagues, because once that tournament starts, I mean, how often do we see a 7-2 and an 8-1? It seems like one or the other is going to happen every year.
And it's probably going to get thrown up even before the weekend, because tomorrow night you got Sacred Heart at Wagner and you got Robert Morris at St. Francis. So those are both games that are probably losses. So after that, basically everyone is kind of on equal footing. And tomorrow night, it might be the game of the night to watch under the radar. That Wagner-Sacred Heart game could be a lot of fun.
Every game is on.
I would circle all 10 of these. Maybe the only one I want to circle is Saturday, Central Connecticut at Mount St. Mary's. That may be a meaningless game. But
But again,
you shut your mouth with this Tyler Cole slander. I stand for Tyler Cole and Donyell Marshall's Blue Devils. They're just not very good.
Yeah.
Right. Let's move on to the OVC, David, where we're talking about a couple of really good teams here, despite the standpoint, both. Maybe three teams, but at least Murray and Belmont.
Well, yeah, I think it's a two-horse race. Belmont, that was I think that was just more of a blip when they lost their conference opener at home. I mean, they've looked so good other than that game. But how about Murray State? The two losses at Auburn, they were close. I think they got as close as 3 or 5 at the end of the game. And then the game at Alabama, and I still feel that they should have won that game. Those are really their only two losses. This is an electric team. And if you ever – I don't know how much of Murray State that you've seen. They have more dunks than Dunk City did. I mean, this is just an electrifying highlight reel type of team.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a real buzz around this team, like Murray State. I mean, they're always well-supported, at least by under-the-radar standards. But people are really, really getting excited about them. And well,
they have one of the most exciting players in the country, though, there. Right?
Yeah, they do.
They have the number 3 pick in the draft next year, probably.
And one of the things, and I know that we're going to be doing our bracket shows, Murray State, they outside of the two games against Auburn and Alabama, they won neither of them. You really, really wish they would have played a tougher schedule out of conference, because this is a good team that could end up with a profile that just isn't good enough if they don't win the conference tournament, which won't be easy because of Belmont, also a good team. Now, nobody else really is, but those two.
I got a little beef with that, because there's a team, the Jacksonville State Gamecocks, that went into Belmont and out-rebounded a much bigger Belmont team, 47-32. 6 of their first 7 players at Jacksonville State are seniors, tons of experience. I think they're finally healthy. The 5 losses, they started 0-3. So I think they,
coach that does not lose conference tournament games.
Right.
Yeah, they're definitely in the mix to get the bid. Murray State's the sexiest, and Belmont plays great team ball. When they're hot from 3, you can't beat them. So
Point of procedural moment. I mean, Belmont cares less about offensive rebounding than
anybody.
Care to have to watch the bottom half of the OVC. I mean, it's so out rebounding them is kind of a given.
Fair enough.
Although I do like them, they're a good team.
I'm looking at the Jacksonville State rotation, and they have 2 guys 6'7", everybody else is 6'3" and under, and they still dominated the glass. But I guess if Belmont's making their shots, it doesn't matter.
All 3 of those teams should be 4-0 by our next podcast. None of them have any huge tests coming up this week.
Right.
Murray is on the road at Tennessee Martin, but I don't think that should be a problem for them.
No, it shouldn't be.
Let's keep rolling here.
Yeah, really.
Let's roll over to the Patriot League. Rocco, Lehigh now 3-0. Bucknell, D did suffer the loss to BU, did bounce back tonight with a win over Colgate, though.
A big win for Lehigh tonight to take control of the league. And I think we had them sort of penciled as a favorite at the start of the year with Bucknell, at least I did. But, you know, Bucknell losing to teams like Boston U, they had a couple big stubs of the toe in the non-conference play. It's certainly up for grabs like a lot of these other leagues we've already discussed. Navy had an incredible week last week with two road wins, and then I'm sorry, they had two home wins, but they beat two good teams who we thought I think it'd be Holy Cross and Colgate.
Yep.
Who are 150-ish teams. But then Navy showed their true colors again tonight. So who knows?
And how about Army 2-1 now? Nice win at BU tonight, David.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. I watched a lot of that game, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another team in this league that I just don't think is good enough that we talked about. That I've been really disappointed with Holy Cross. Losing 50-48 to Navy's bad. They're staring at 1-2 in the league. They had some good tests for them out of conference, but weren't really competitive. I mean, you know, losing by 20 to Michigan isn't bad. Doing it when you only score 37 points is really bad. So I've been so disappointed by Holy Cross so far. The talent's better than this. At some point, you know, are Grandison and Butler going to be able to take this thing over? They're guys who are really kind of in the sophomore slump right now for this Holy Cross team. They have the talent to be at the top of the league, but it doesn't seem to be clicking yet. And it, by the time it does, it might be too late because Lehigh has just taken off at the top of the league off the top here.
Right. Lehigh this week is at Colgate. Then they're hosting American. Holy Cross at Bucknell Monday night. Kind of circle that one if you want to circle anything in this conference, I think.
Yeah.
Is that a CBS Sports Network game?
Probably is if it's a Monday nighter.
Oh, that sounds like a televised game. It usually is with that.
The SoCon, and I think we could talk about a minimum of four teams in this conference, and maybe as many as six. But Wofford and Greensboro both 4-0. Furman 3-1, still with probably the most impressive overall resume. East Tennessee State, another solid team. Yeah. David, let me start with you.
I like all four of those, and I think I like them. If I had to order them, it would be Greensboro, Wofford, East Tennessee State, Furman, as far as where I think they're all going to end up. I know Furman has the big win over Nova. They probably have the best resume now, as you said. But, like, Greensboro, Wofford, really good teams. Samford, we had not – this is our first show since the Are You Stepping to Me?
Yes. Yes. Comment.
And, God, if only they would have been able to either win that game – that was against
East Tennessee State.
Yeah, against East Tennessee State. Or at least follow it up with a win in the next game. But
Western Carolina was bad.
Losing at Western Carolina was bad. That hurt.
Yeah. Samford, that one is particularly disappointing because, like, we had been really impressed with Samford all year long, and here they are off to a 1-3 start.
But now we're really impressed with their head coach, Scott Padgett. Carl Hess comes up to him in the huddle. And goes, he says, are you stepping to me right to Carl Hess, who deserved it?
Carl Hess, I didn't realize he was still refereeing basketball until that happened, which raises the question.
Yeah, there's a reason. Go ahead.
Well, this is a guy who had a couple of incidents. What was the game? I know it was a UConn game, Chad, where he got confused as to which team was going toward which basket.
Yeah, he got the baskets mixed up again.
Go to Chad on that one? Really? Really? Yeah. You're going to do that with me right here?
I meant to say Zach. Yeah.
It was a UConn Marquette game.
Yeah.
And look, there's a reason that Carl Hess is not refereeing Big East games anymore, but actually SoCon games.
Yes.
And it's not because he loves the joy of the lower basketball leagues.
Yeah. And then in the ACC, he had some moments. He ejected a couple of fans for no reason. He yelled a racial slur at someone that happened to be on Wake Forest's board of trustees who was in the – so he's gone from yelling at
fans. And how about Tim
Miles?
Yeah,
he ejected Tim Miles from an NCAA. Just a really bad run, and then he decides to charge at a coach, Scott Padgett, a very large human being.
6'9", 280.
I am very –
Oh, man.
I'm very excited to see Carl Hess refereeing the next American East game I go to next year.
Anyway.
But this conference, though, overall, I mean, you got four teams in the top 70 of the net. You've got, I mean, those same four teams are all showing top 100 in resume metrics. That's not seem things we normally see in these under-the-radar conferences, Rocco, and that's what just impresses me. Do we have a shot at two teams from this league?
Maybe, but one of them's got – it's probably got to be Wofford or East Tennessee State, and they've got – one of them's got to run away with it. I'm sorry, Furman's still in the mix too. So, but I think one of them's got to really dominate the league, and I don't see that happening, but I'd love to see it happen.
Upcoming week, huge game tomorrow night, Wofford at Greensboro.
Love that game.
Circle that game. And then follow that up Saturday with Furman at Greensboro. I mean, just a great week for this week.
Right. Chad, you know what this is? This is what the MAC used to be.
Yeah.
This is just really deep at the top, up and down, great crowds, fun coaches, and this league continues to develop, and I'm really impressed by it. I mean, every year they have one of the better atmospheres postseason-wise as well, I think, in Myrtle Beach.
This one's in Myrtle Beach.
They're at Asheville.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry. Nashville.
Asheville.
Yeah, I've just been impressed to see how this league has developed, even though I don't know what a map looks like, apparently.
Okay.
And it reminds me, it's just the basketball in the Southeast is getting better, and it's not just about the SEC. And if you have a chance, folks, watch Wofford, Greensboro, Furman, East Tennessee State. Watch them. Don't watch. VMI is bad, but fun.
Citadel, a ton of fun, and it's got wins this year, too.
Citadel, I meant to say, also, okay. Yeah. That could decide the league is what of those top four teams, the Citadel could just put them out of their wits one night, but with 80 possessions. It'll be fascinating to watch.
They got the Bucks tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep. So step up first to the challenge of psychotic basketball pace. It's great.
Let's go to the Southland Conference, where I think we just saw an upset tonight as we were recording this. Yes, Stephen F. Austin just lost to Nicholls State. Sam Houston State now the only undefeated team in the league. And Rocco, is there anything what do we do with this conference at this point? Just put it on the 16
line? Put it on the 16 line.
We put them with a lot of the other conferences we've already discussed. Anybody could beat anybody. I do think there is some separation. Stephen F. Austin's probably still at the top with Nicholls State. I think they've played everybody pretty tough this year, for a Southland team. I think Abilene Christian started to fade back, and we've seen a little bit of possibilities out of Sam Houston State, but they haven't really been tested yet in this conference. So
Sam Houston did beat Abilene, but Abilene bounced back tonight with a win at McNeese. So.
Right.
I have a hot take on this league. The only team worth trying to watch in this league is probably Central Arkansas, because Houston Baptist also plays at a high pace, but Central Arkansas does it a little better, I think. When I say better, they're worse, but the turnovers are more entertaining from what I've seen. So Central Arkansas is a must-watch in a way.
Okay, watch Central Arkansas and upcoming schedule the Southland. I don't know if we're really worth watching.
I've got it. I mean, Stephen F. Austin, Nicholls State, maybe?
That game was just played tonight. It's
final.
Sorry,
that one. So let's move on. What's next?
let's go on to the SWAC.
Must we watch it?
Oh, the SWAC.
Let's go from bad to worse.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
So, great night of basketball. As you said, three games in the state of Alabama.
Yes, huge, great game. We had a ton of fun. What were we watching? We watched Alabama A&M Grambling. We watched one of the other games there. I don't remember.
Alabama A&M with a nice win over Grambling. Or did they win?
They did. They pulled out that win over Grambling.
Really big upset, actually. Yeah, Alabama State was
– Alabama football.
Zach, I do got to give a shout-out to Alabama A&M. They have now beaten Grambling and Tulane.
Yeah.
No what? They own Louisiana.
Grambling, the team that we thought would win the league, going on the road trip to Alabama, probably the weakest of the road trips, losing both of them.
LSU, schedule them, you cowards.
Yeah.
I think
Louisiana.
Texas Southern, though, clearly the best team in this league, both what they did out of conference. Yeah. They're already 2-0 in the league.
Yeah, and Texas Southern, it should be noted, especially after all these leagues that are just down this year, they're in position to at least get a 15 seed, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think they will.
They won't be a 16.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't remember. It's been a minute since the SWAC was inside the 16 line.
Yeah.
Unless they get upset in the conference.
They're not going to be a 15. You're going to want to see if they get there.
Yeah.
They beat Oregon when they had Bol Bol. They beat Baylor. They have the win over A&M.
Texas A&M.
Those are three really impressive wins. They could – it brings me back a little bit to the Southern team that was a 16 against Gonzaga. And I was telling people, if ever there's a time, this team – and they had him – that Southern team had that Gonzaga team dead to rights and couldn't pull it off. This Texas Southern team, the 15, would be very interesting to watch. It would be really great if somehow it was against Virginia, but I don't think that's happening.
They're at Prairie View on Saturday. That's their only game this coming up week.
Yeah.
Summit, where South Dakota State loses to Fort Wayne. And Rocco, is it time to start discussing Fort Wayne?
Yes. And Fort Wayne, I don't know if we've had a show since. They pulled off something very interesting to start conference play. They were scheduled to do a Friday, Sunday back-to-back with North Dakota State, but the Friday game got snowed out, so they had to play it on Saturday. And then they took care of business, beat North Dakota in North Dakota's first ever Summit League game. The next night, they beat North Dakota State with, I think, 12 hours or 14 hours in between games. And won
in overtime.
In overtime. And then they bring the big dogs, South Dakota State, with Mike Dom and Jenkins and all the guys, and they crush them at home. So I think there's a fun story brewing with Purdue Fort Wayne.
All right. David, I know that Oral Roberts also off to a 3-0 start, but I don't expect that to hold up. But the upcoming schedule here, we've got Oral Roberts is actually at Fort Wayne tomorrow night, and then Fort Wayne at South Dakota on Sunday.
Yeah, we knew the league wasn't going to be strong, but it's just we thought there was a really good team in this league, and they've been disappointing over and over and over. And they could still win it. I mean, it's still early. They could certainly win the tournament, but South Dakota State, just not as good as we thought.
Probably true. Yeah, and Oral Roberts, real quick, Chad. Okay. They've got a interesting story brewing. They've got a freshman, Kevin Obener, that comes off the bench. He's still not in the starting lineup, but the last three games, all the Summit League games, he's averaging only 24 minutes a game and over 20 points a game. So he's coming off the bench and lighting it up and gaining a lot of confidence. So this Oral Roberts team might be worth checking out the next couple games.
Well, yeah, at Fort Wayne, at South Dakota, at South Dakota State, we'll learn a lot about this team this week.
And David, this is a league. It's number one in efficiency, and it's number two in three-point percentage. If you want to see people – if you want to see a chance for somebody to drop 50 randomly, this is the league for you on the Mid-Coast Sports Network.
David, over in the Sun Belt, I pulled up the profile for this Georgia State team on the left here because I am very high on this team, especially with a nice sweep of the Texas road trip at Texas Arlington, at Texas State this past
year. Yeah, well, Texas State, another really good team, and Georgia State went in there and won, and it was a really good game. It was a high-caliber game. You kind of wish more fans would have been there, but I like this profile. They did go out to Montana and lose, and at the time I didn't think about it, but Montana a little bit disappointing since then. And still, one of my favorite quotes of the year, 2-0 against the SEC first place.
Listen, the SEC.
Hunter, we need more.
3-0 if you want to include Tulane back in the day.
Yeah. Ron Hunter, one of those guys, you kind of wonder, he's been successful everywhere. You kind of wonder why he's kind of stayed put. Really good coach, really good guy, charismatic guy, and unbeaten in the SEC this year.
And unable to stand up when his team wins. But
yes.
Rocco, is there anyone else you look at beyond Georgia State now after what we saw this past week?
I'm a little curious about how good this UL Monroe team is. All five of their losses are on the road. So I kind of give them a hall pass because you got Ole Miss, LSU, Michigan State, Texas, or four of those five. Tennessee Tech, okay, that's a bad loss, but it was a road game. Now they pulled off a couple road wins with smaller schools, but they haven't had the tests yet. But their efficiency is growing and getting better over time. So I'm curious to see how good UL Monroe is.
Also give a shout out to South Alabama 2-0 start. Their head coach, the guy came over from Nichols last year.
Yeah, Richie Riley.
So I think he's going to get – I don't think this is their year, but I think he will get things turned around there.
Yeah.
He might only last there about a year or two before he gets the call up.
Yeah.
And just keep an eye on Georgia Southern. They're it could be a sleeper team. They're going to give Georgia State hell in both those games. That's a huge rivalry. It's Georgia State's last conference game of the year. It's going to be at Georgia State. Georgia Southern hosts. This is a team right now. This is a team that had a pretty good non-conference slate. Their worst loss, I don't know, Radford away, I guess. They don't have a ton of great wins, but they haven't played any team that ranks below 250, which is pretty impressive and very difficult to do when you're in the Sun Belt.
Upcoming schedule, circle that game. If you're on Georgia, if you're talking about Monroe, Saturday, Monroe is at Georgia State, as Georgia State holds both of the Louisiana schools this
week. Yeah, and Georgia Southern before that. So,
Last conference, the WAC, where as it comes up here, we could start by discussing what happened last Thursday night, Rocco, when New Mexico State falls to Cal Baptist.
That's right. First ever conference game for the Transitional Lancers, former team of the people last year. What a cool moment. It seemed like a really amazing atmosphere down in Riverside.
And then they followed up by losing to Texas Rio Grande Valley, but
well, yeah, naturally it couldn't be all roses, right? But amazing to just show that they have a good enough roster to even hang with New Mexico State, who does have a very capable team to make some noise in the NCAAs. Is really impressive to me, and I think the fact that Utah Valley and Seattle U started 0-2. Those are two teams that I think could sneak up and win an auto bid. Shows how good this league is.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle really surprised me, but and the way they didn't show up at all against Grand Canyon, and Lopes now 2-0 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Baker's still with big wins. Yep.
I still like New Mexico State. I know that they, despite the loss, I think it was more of a blip than it was anything else. One more piece of news, Chad, or are we going to wait till it's official?
Well, it won't be official until Friday, but it's going to be announced. Dixie State out of the southwestern corner there of Utah, not far from southern Utah, who's not in this conference, but Dixie State is going to be announcing on Friday that they're moving up to D1 and will be joining the WAC. So another team coming in. They should be up to 10 teams. I believe they'll start next year.
I think they start their transition next year is what the plan is. So
and I'd like to go ahead and just congratulate them ahead of time on beating UNLV next year. Get that out of the way. Another team in that neighborhood that UNLV will struggle with.
Huge game tomorrow night, though, in the WAC. One of the big rivalries here, Grand Canyon at New Mexico State. That's become a new rivalry.
Looking forward to that one. That one's always fun. New Mexico State dominating that series, but always great theater at that game.
Let's go quickly to our under-the-radar top 10, and we didn't hide it. So there it is, everybody. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and I threw it off. I forgot about Georgia State.
Well, let's go run through it real quickly. I gave honorable mentions to New Mexico State, Vermont, and Irvine, but 10th place was a three-way tie between East Tennessee State, Furman, and Hofstra. At 9, we had Georgia State. At 8, we had Liberty.
Georgia State's too low, and that's my fault. So
Greensboro and Belmont tied for 6. North Texas and Charleston tied for 4th. I like North Texas even better than this based on that record.
Yeah.
Top 3, Murray, Lipscomb, and Wofford. Murray being number 1. Rocco, any thoughts on the list?
I'm okay with it because I think, mine was probably more predictive now looking back on it. But I think results-wise, I think this is well-deserved, especially North Texas, especially Furman. Furman probably should be higher because they've only lost the one game.
They have two losses now. The Marquette game and the one conference loss.
East Tennessee, right? Yeah.
I guess on that matter, let me turn this down here, and let's run through any final thoughts. Rocco, let me start with you.
Yeah, I mean, you guys got me fired up for East Tennessee State the Citadel tomorrow. So, you know, I don't have a lot of final thoughts, but I do know I'm clearing the schedule for that one tomorrow. So, great having you on, Zach. It was good having a show with you. And
thank you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, Zach, any other thoughts for the night?
I'm mostly just thanks for having me on. You guys are way, way, way more knowledgeable than me, obviously, at this stuff. And it's great for the sport to have folks that are into these leagues as much as the other leagues, because God knows the players, the students, and the coaches are putting every bit of effort in, as you know, the teams in the top leagues are, and they're doing with a lot less. I was mostly just waiting. I mean, we did an Under the Radar podcast. We're just not going to talk about the Pac-12. I'm a little confused because,
yeah.
I mean, they have to be at this level by now, because holy crap, is the Pac-12 bad. One thought also is Gonzaga's kind of sucked the oxygen out of the room in the West Coast Conference, but I've watched the other games. I've been really impressed with a lot of the teams outside of Gonzaga in that league this year. I've had a lot of fun watching San Francisco and San Diego especially.
Yep.
So that's something for folks to pay attention to, that it's not just about Gonzaga out there. That league is getting really strong. They've got really good leadership at the top. They've strengthened their TV deal, and that's going to be interesting to watch as the rest of the year goes on. As you know, Gonzaga is going to have a fight here, I think, more than anybody anticipated. That's my 10,000-foot view of it.
All right, David, you want to finish things off?
I don't know what to say. I'm just excited. We've got our first bracket show tomorrow, or seedless show, or whatever the hell we're going to do. But again, it's just, I mean, now that conference play has started, it just feels like this week in general, even on Monday night when none of the games mattered, but both the on the radar and under the radar games, it's just been a fun week. And, you know, hopefully it's this way for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that I noticed that tonight. I mean, the benches at that Hartford-UMBC game, I mean, every possession was live and die the last 10 minutes of regulation. And that's what you get with conference play that you just don't get.
Right,
because
yeah.
Everything's on the line in a game like that.
Yeah.
I guess on that note, on behalf of Rocco, David, Zach, anybody else we have on the podcast, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We will. I think we're recording some type of show tomorrow night, so check that out. Check for that on the website as well. We'll be back with more Under the Radar next week, though, and we'll talk to you again real soon.